Welcome back, folks. It's time for another Patriots podcast from 98.5thesportshub.com. I'm Matt Dolph. I'm here with Alex Barth. What's going on, Barth?
What is up? It's Chiefs week. Big week. Huge week.
I'm glad to hear you. You sound great. Alex has a new headset. I told him to throw that other piece of crap in the trash, and he went and burned it, actually. So I enjoyed watching that. That was fun. I am a psycho. All right. It's been a crazy few weeks for the Patriots, up and down. The offense has looked different each week, and now they have their biggest test of the season with the Chiefs, who dominated the Ravens the other night. That game was not as close as the final score indicated. If not for the one Chiefs turnover on offense, they probably would have won like 41-10 or something crazy. Patrick Mahomes out of his mind. Offense. Right. Andy Reid went about as deep into his bag of tricks as he's ever seen. He was pulling out a piece of lint here and an old penny there. And, you know, it just felt like he was just trying to make Bill Belichick as miserable as possible. Throw this in there. We got to put this formation. We got to line these guys up. We're going to stack these four guys. We're going to throw to the fullback. We're going to throw to the left tackle. Andy Reid had a lot of fun on Monday night. What did you think of that game?
Yeah, that game to me was more about the Ravens than the Chiefs. Honestly, that's a game, you know, if you're the Ravens, that was the matchup we were all waiting for last year. Tennessee comes in, they stop Baltimore in that first playoff game. They don't get that shot. You know, you can't be the king unless you beat the king, and the Ravens exactly. Never got their chance. So
disappointing effort from the Ravens.
You'd think they'd show up. And then after the game, this was the biggest takeaway for me that whole game. It actually didn't occur during the game. After the game, Lamar Jackson said, you know, it felt like they were doing defensively, the Chiefs. We're doing defensively what the Titans did last year in that playoff game. And I have said since last year, I don't think Lamar Jackson is blueprint proof in that I think once enough of what he does gets on tape, there will be a formula to stop him. Obviously, it still takes good players. It still takes execution. But that's now two teams, and I think three, because the Tennessee strategy from last year – actually reminded me a lot of what the Niners did. They didn't beat them in that game in the rain, but I think they held them. It was something like 17 points, 14, 17 points, and Jimmy G let them down offensively. But it's on tape now, and I'll bet when the Patriots play the Ravens, you'll see a similar defensive game plan and all that. So that was my biggest takeaway. Lamar's really being tested now. He can't do all this whoopsie-doopsie-doo, and don't get me wrong, amazing ball carrier. Ball in his hand, most dangerous player in the league.
That was when he was at his best in that game, running around.
But now there are ways teams have figured out to contain that, whereas the Chiefs, and we'll get into them a little more, they might be blueprint proof. I don't think I've ever seen a team that was blueprint proof since at least the 07 Patriots, right?
It's and insane.
We didn't really get to see, because who knows? Teams might have had a blueprint for them in 08, but you know, when Tom Brady's not the quarterback, that becomes a whole different discussion. But you know, they add Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the backfield. And
looks pretty good.
DeMarcus Robinson gets another year on his belt. Sammy Watkins is suddenly good again, and they can just there's Mecole so
Hardman,
many different ways they can beat you.
Hardman Mecole catches Hardman's the deep touchdown. If he could throw deep to Hardman, and he's going to make that play, that's going to make them extra dangerous because you have the obvious with Hill and Kelce still. And I couldn't believe – you gotta help me out with this because I couldn't help but go back and chart their offense last night. 56 out of 75 snaps using some sort of motion before the snap. And they said Travis Kelce in motion. It feels like every single passing play. It's just – is that a normal amount for like a West Coast offense, or are the Chiefs excessive in that department? Because I never like actually went back and did the math on it.
Right.
But that just seems like an excessive use of motion for me.
I thought it was a little high. Bill actually said it was about average this morning, Bill Belichick, on his press conference. Yeah. That might just be Bill. I don't know.
But I didn't know if he meant like a general or like last night was a typical or – But they still use it more than other teams is what I'm trying to say.
Right. I mean, if you compare – the thing is nobody's really run a run-and-shoot offense in the NFL since the mid-90s in the Falcons. And then in the 80s you had Mouse Davis in Detroit with Barry Sanders as the offensive coordinator.
Right.
But, you know, it hasn't been – the air, people call it an air raid. It really is more now run-and-shoot, especially when they – integrated the running back into it a little more. So yeah, that's a ton of motion because the whole idea is with the on the fly adjustments, it helps everybody to do the way the offense works is the wide receivers are making the reads as much as the quarterback. The wide receiver kind of has a general plan for what they're going to do, but they are allowed within the context of the offense to adjust what they're doing to a certain degree to fit the coverage that they read. So it's okay. Not, you know, and that's not necessarily every play, right? They still have a basic 10-yard out, a 5-yard in, a slant, whatever. But
it was shocking when they didn't run pre-snap motion going through the plays one right. by one. I was stunned when there wasn't – when they just ran a regular play.
So the reason they're doing that is that's the most effective way to tell if the defense is in man or zone.
Yeah.
And that way, as the receivers get into their routes, right, and they need to know what they're facing because it's not just on the quarterback to find them. Not that this makes Patrick Mahomes any less impressive. It's more impressive because he's making these reads on the spot. He doesn't necessarily know what his receivers are doing. When they get out into their routes, if they already know ahead of time, this guy's on me in man, or there's a zone here, or this and that, they don't have to think as much in the middle of the play. They can kind of figure out ahead of time, you know, they see the man go in motion, they see maybe a safety come across the formation if it's Travis Kelce, or a corner come across the formation if it's Tyreek Hill, and they see that and they say, okay, it's man. They look at who's across from him. I saw this guy on tape, couldn't really defend this. I know he has me in man, so I'm going to run that instead of just getting into the route and then having to decide mid-route if it's man or zone. So as an identifier, and this is league-wide, the Chiefs use it a ton, but pre-snap motion is way up across the league because as passing becomes more prevalent, as a pre-snap identifier, it's just so lethally effective. And then on top of that, you can get mismatches. The Patriots are great with this. This is James White going far back, Shane Vereen, Danny Woodhead, they all made their money off of this. If you recognize you have zone, or sorry, if you recognize you have man, you can motion your running back out wide outside the numbers, and suddenly you force a middle linebacker to play man coverage on the sideline, which is something they're likely not very good at or not used to doing. So you can capitalize on that. So yeah, the Chiefs motion, it is a ton, but that's where it all starts. It's not just they're trying to be fancy. That is part of what allows them to be so effective.
Well, I think in the case of Andy Reid, there is a lot of getting fancy out there. Like you just said, there were plays where they would motion the running back out wide and then motion him back in, and then like they'd send Tyreek Hill like into the backfield, and then he does like a spinorama and back up to like the slot, and like and then back into the backfield. It's just, I don't know. I feel like they don't need to do so much of that, but I get exactly what you're saying, which is why they do it. I know why, like, teams, right. I know why other teams do it. And so, yeah, like, the key for the Patriots defense is basically to not get caught in those mismatches. So, I mean, is it off base to sort of describe it like switching on a pick and roll? Like, they just sort of have to know who they need to cover and then, like, who they need to maybe switch off to if they're trying to, you know, motion a running back out wide, for instance, or put a receiver in the backfield. Like, I feel like the Patriots have better personnel. They have more the type of personnel to combat it than the Ravens would. Is that fair to say, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Because the best way to stop what the Chiefs are trying to do is lock down man coverage. And the Patriots have two of, if not the best, two man corners in the league. Gilmore struggled this year, but you know, if you go back over the last 365 days, Gilmore's clearly been the best man corner in the league, and JC Jackson's at least in the top five. So, and then for whatever reason, Jonathan Jones just has Tyreek Hill's number. It's just one of those matchups where he's always been, and with safety help over the top from Devin McCourty.
You're talking about that AFC Championship game, of course, is what you're talking about.
Yes, he's always, and even in the other games, he's been more effective than other guys have. You know, you're not going to blank Tyreek Hill. It's just not going to happen. So they do certainly have the personnel for it. It's all about the communication, and this is where you really miss a guy like Patrick Chung and a guy like Dont'a Hightower, guys who were elite pre-snap communicators. And I've been saying that since the preseason. This is, well, we saw it in the Seahawks game a little bit too, but here we go again, where just how much they saw, right? You can replace them. You can get somebody else in who's maybe even a little younger and quicker, stronger, faster, whatever.
Well, yeah, you got Duggar probably in a lot of Chung roles now, you know, or Joe Williams. So,
but the reality is just everything Patrick Chung had seen through his 10 years in the league, right? You can't replicate that. You can't replace that. And so much of defending the Chiefs is recognition and looking at what you saw on tape and knowing what you've done, what they've done against you in the past in similar offensive systems in the past, and just trying to pick out patterns. That is really what it comes down to. And it's, if you're a rookie, you can look at the tape all you want. You don't have that previous experience, which is so crucial.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I think that's going to be, it's going to be a huge factor. I think that's why Juwan Bentley is going to be, again, a big factor for the defense. So I don't know how you feel about that based on how he's played so far. But I think based on what I've seen from the defense, I think the communication has been good. I think there haven't been many plays. I could think of like the one touchdown in Seattle where he got like the number four receiver wide open on a shallow crosser and he easily got a touchdown. That's like the one play I could think of that like that was a communication breakdown. You know what I mean? I think it's really more – I think the problems they've had when they've had problems is more about the execution and do they have the personnel to execute what they need to do. And I think Juwan Bentley has been beaten a lot. He got beat a lot in the Seattle game. And so I don't know. I think his communication's been good. I think he's a smart player. He knows where to be. Can he make the play when he gets there? And I mean, it's only been three games, so maybe he's easing his way in, and he'll be playing better by the end of the year. But are you sharing that concern that you don't know if they have the personnel that they might be ready for every little thing that Andy Reid's going to throw at them? But do they have the personnel to execute the defense? I think that's my concern. Is that do you share that concern?
So I don't think any team has the personnel to stop the Chiefs, right? Because the roster is just built too well.
Of course, yeah.
I think the Patriots have the best personnel for the situation. Like if I had to rank them.
Just better than the Ravens. It's certainly better than the Texans and better coaching than the Texans for sure. So that's why.
But
can they do sort of what the Chargers did, you know?
And I think they can. I certainly do. And when it comes to Bentley, you mentioned it in him making the right reads. Obviously, you still need him in run situations, and the Chiefs are running the ball more this year than they have. But I look at the game plan last week against Vegas, and obviously the Chiefs' offense is a million times better than the Raiders. Let me throw that qualifier out there. That being said.
Especially the quarterback. Not going to be double-teaming the check down against Patrick
Mahomes. That was hilarious. That all being said, the way the Raiders are set up offensively, you've got a star tight end and then a bunch of speed at wide receiver. That's more or less the same prototype the Chiefs have. They just have much better players across the board. So I would imagine that the Patriots defense, again, will use a similar prototype, a similar base, and you're going to do a lot more and you're going to approach it differently, right? The Raiders don't have a Tyreek Hill, obviously. Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a better receiver than Josh Jacobs, but it's the same general concept. So if you go back and look at what they did last week, Juwan Bentley played a season low in snap counts. Those snaps that were lost by him coming off the field, the ones that he didn't play, were not replaced by another linebacker. They were replaced with safeties. They used Adrian Phillips heavily in the box. They used Terrence Brooks a lot in the box. They used Kyle Duggar in the box. You mentioned him earlier. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see a similar set where we see Lawrence Guy in the middle, Chase Winovich and John Simon as the other two linemen, and then just defensive backs. And it's crazy. Phillips and Brooks or Phillips and Duggar as your two linebackers, right? And that's who's taking care of definitely Helaire and maybe at least helping out with Travis Kelce. But, it'd be nice if Juwan Bentley could play a great game. And, again, they need to stop the rundown on the goal line. I don't know that this is a huge Juwan Bentley game. I don't know that he's necessarily a key to the defense in this game just because I think the personnel needed pulls him off the field more often than usual. He'll play about 80%, but he's been high 90s to 100 through the first couple weeks.
Yeah. What do you even call that? The eight defensive backs, the penny package? What the hell is that?
It's probably that weird thing where like Bill considers Phillips a linebacker.
Phillips and Duggar are linebackers, yeah.
Right. You know how he talks about with Mike Gesicki when they play the Dolphins? Well, they got four tight ends they got four wide receivers on the field. Well, it's three and Gesicki. Yeah, we approach that as four wide receivers. Gesicki's a wide receiver. Bill's not paying attention to what positions guys are listed in fantasy football or in Madden. He has his own way of looking at it. You can call it penny. Some people honestly might call it prevent defense. I've seen it referred to as like a prevent base, but I'm sure the way they look at it in their definition in their playbook, Phillips there is listed as a jack linebacker.
Yeah, that's probably – Phillips can sort of play that hybrid type of role. So I guess that makes sense. What I don't think we're going to see a lot of the Patriots that we saw from the Ravens is blitzing. I don't know why they just continually tried to blitz Patrick Mahomes. He's obviously – I get the idea that, like, the only way to sort of slow Mahomes down might be to just speed him up a little bit and maybe rush a bad throw or something. but see if he gets like happy feet. But like that's not working. They were ready.
It.
They had plays ready for it. I remember one. I think it was Edwards-Helaire, where like they sent Matt Judon or someone in on a blitz, and he was in like untouched. But then like Patrick Mahomes just dumps it off, and then the back picks up like 25 yards or something, whatever it was.
Little wheel route.
Yeah, like I don't think we're gonna see any blitzing. So I mean, I don't know. Are they just gonna muddy it up? You think like have all because you got to defend the short to intermediate areas with the amount of short passing in this style of offense, which is the crazy thing. It's that they're known for like the big plays, but they've put together a bunch of drives. I actually have it written down here. They had an 11-play 75-yard drive against Houston. They had a 7-play 75-yard drive against Houston, and then they had a 10-play 59-yard drive against the Chargers, all for touchdowns. So I mean, like Patrick Mahomes is showing that like you can take away the big plays, but I'll pick you apart with paper cuts too. Like, so, I mean, I really don't know. Yeah. Like this is where you say I don't know if anyone has the personnel to do it. Like I'm not saying like to shut them down. I mean like just to contain them, get some stops.
And that's all new this year, all that underneath stuff. And he's been much more willing to check the ball down. And you're right. You don't blitz a guy. I mean, they might send Kyle Duggar here and there, but
yeah,
the trick with Mahomes, and this is where this you're getting into an analytics conversation, like one of the weird football analytics Twitter things. Okay. Of sacks.
I'm only kind of anti-analytics. I'm only kind of.
It's not a real analytic thing, but it's a popular debate in that community that sacks are not as relevant of a stat as we portray them to be, right? Because if you rush the quarterback.
Total pressures or whatever right. The stat they have, you know.
If you get one sack, but the 10 other times you rush aggressively, the quarterback breaks contain and either scrambles or finds an open man down the field on a broken play.
Exactly. Yep.
It's one step forward, two steps back. So what you want to do with Mahomes is just you want to push him off his spot. If you can get to him and you can bring him down, you have a clean shot, go for it. I'm not saying don't sack him. But the bigger thing is push that pocket in tight. He wants to set his feet, look across, and throw. He's obviously great when he's moving, but if you notice, like, he moves on his terms. It's one thing when the quarterback doesn't have the read and moves around to extend the play. It's another thing when the pocket is being shifted and the quarterback has to move with the pocket. Quarterbacks don't like that. Mahomes can do it, but that is where he's at his weakest. Now, still better than just about any other quarterback in the league when you put him there.
Yeah, that's what makes him – that's what he's amazing. That's why he's amazing is that he'll make these ridiculous throws on the run, off his back foot. You know, that's what makes him so unbelievable.
But if you're too aggressive going at him, you're not going to be able to move the pocket because he's just going to step up while you get down the field. So it's all about contain. It's kind of the same with Lamar Jackson in a way. You can't be too aggressive, even for the – like, this isn't even just blitzing. For the down linemen, for the guys who are just designated rushers, you're better off just forcing that pocket to the left or the right and knocking him off his spot, maybe bump a lineman into him, something like that, than getting too aggressive and letting him bail out and come back around, and all of a sudden he has half the field to work with no pass rushers anywhere near him. That's the worst-case scenario. So that's the way you do it. You mentioned slowing them down. I had this argument with somebody the other day talking about the Patriots defense hasn't been that good against the Chiefs. They allowed 25 points. If you hold the Chiefs to 25 points, that's an accomplishment. I'm going to kind of sound like a nut for saying this, but hang with me here. Points aren't always the definitive measure of a defense.
No.
And 99% of the time they are. And I hate that we still rank defenses on total yards. It should be based on points. But look at it like this. If you, and this is kind of the conversation I had with this person. If you are up 7, or sorry, if you're up 10 with like 5 minutes to go, you're on defense against the Chiefs, you're up 10 with 5 minutes to go, how aggressively are you going to play? What is more so your prerogative? Is it to stop a score by all means necessary or force the Chiefs to take what they can get and use up 4 minutes of that 5 minute clock? And yeah, you probably will give up a touchdown, but then your offense gets the ball back with a minute left and you can probably end it, right? They're saying, we'll play defense. The whole point of defense is stopping points. But how are you going to go about that, right? How are you going to go about stopping points? Are you going to tell your secondary, jump every route, try to get on every ball, try to force every fumble? Because then you're going to have guys getting over the top, guys breaking tackles, et cetera, and you're trying not to allow the touchdown style of defense, the Chiefs are going to score right away, give you the ball back, they'll stop you, score again, and win the game. So obviously you don't want to allow the Chiefs to score, obviously, but you have to look at it realistically, and there are times in this game where if the Chiefs go on one of those you know, let's say the Patriots can get an early lead, which they tend to do against the Chiefs. They're trouble with the Chiefs in the second half. Let's say the Patriots can get an early lead. That 11-play, 8-minute drive, if you really wear that offense out and make them work for it, you're hitting the receivers, okay? And they are going yard by yard by yard, and you're forcing them to show you as much of their hand as you can get them to do. That drive's not a total loss, especially if you can get it to end in a field goal. So it's going to be really frustrating. It's the definition of bend, don't break, but that's the most effective strategy. Everybody thinks you have to fight fire with fire and go up against this all-time aggressive offense with an aggressive defensive approach. That's exactly what they're counting on. That's exactly what they want you to do. That's how Patrick Mahomes won that first MVP, because people saw that defense, got scared. They sent everything at it. They tried to jailbreak it, and he just took advantage. Sit back. Let the plays come to you. Just make them uncomfortable, right? Hit the receivers coming over the middle. Get Patrick Mahomes off his spot. Don't let him hit that deep shot that's going to light that building up, because remember, there's fans this week. Don't let him hit the deep shot that's going to light the building up and light the sideline up. 2 yards, 5 yards, 3 yards, 4 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards. Take it, get the stop in the red zone, move on.
That's what I think. Yeah, I mean, I think that's what other teams have tried to do, but then they don't have the same sort of killer instinct offensively. At least Houston doesn't. And I mean, the Chargers had a rookie quarterback, and I think the Ravens just got run out of the building because, like you said, they were being too aggressive on defense. Well, so
you see, too, some teams are good at it at first, and then they almost think like it's working. It is working, but they think like, oh, look at this, we're holding them. They're only getting like 3 yards to play.
Right, yeah, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're really doing it.
And then all of a sudden it's, okay, let's crank this up a little bit here. And then, boom, the Chiefs strike. So Bill's not going to do that. He's not going to get complacent. He's not going to get lulled into a false sense of security. He's going to go at it for a full 60 minutes. He's going to commit. Bill O'Brien, not so much.
I think this is why, and I actually asked Bill about that after – well, I asked Bill about the defense, or Chase Winovich specifically, after the game against the Raiders. I just thought he could give a little thing about Chase Winovich because he had another really good game. He has some ridiculous numbers that certain fans were weirdly angry to hear about. But, but Bill didn't seem – he wasn't thrilled at all. He was like, oh, yeah, they, 20 points is 20 points. Yeah, he didn't. I think he hated that they gave up two touchdowns in the final 2 minutes of each half. And in the case of the first half, it was in the final 30 seconds or whatever it was. Right. And so, yeah, I don't think he wants to see that again. He knows that he can't let that happen against the Chiefs. But, I mean, to quote him, at the end of the day, 20 points is 20 points. That would actually be a good thing against the Chiefs in Kansas City, which brings us to, back to one more key to the game before we get out of here is I think the way – this is my sort of prediction. I think it is going to go sort of like we've seen these games go since Patrick Mahomes became the starter between the Patriots and the Chiefs, is that it's going to start slow. Both teams are going to get stops. Both teams are going to sort of feel each other out. It's actually going to feel like a Patriots Super Bowl, the way those games go, starting slow, and then things open up in the second half. But, yeah, I think the key is – I think they know – I think Bill knows deep down inside this team's too good and they're not going to completely shut them down. They are going to – they're going to hit a play on him at one point. And the key is to not sort of go on tilt and feel like he needs to start overcompensating or doing too much on the defensive side, and just try to keep it as close as you can. Get a few key stops and get to the final 2 minutes of that game, and then we can depend on Bill Belichick and Cam Newton being able to manage the end of that game better than Mahomes and Reed. I hope Andy Reed sort of, you know, goes into Andy Reed, the classic Andy Reed mode, and he doesn't know how to manage his timeouts and all that. And maybe Cam Newton gets the ball back and they're down four with a minute to go and see if they can actually get it in the end zone this time. So I think it's going to go. I kind of want it to sort of go that way because that would be exciting. But that's sort of how I see the game. Obviously, you want to keep it close against the Chiefs, but it's almost like Bill sort of lean into that end of the game management. It's like, just get us the ball at the very end, and we'll figure it out.
Well, I'm wondering if they're going to be more aggressive offensively this time around, because they have Cam Newton, they have that new look offense, and to me, honestly, the game's going to come down to the other side of the ball. I think you know what Mahomes is going to do against the Patriots defense. It's the same units from the last 2-3 years, really. I'm nervous about Joe Tooney going up against Chris Jones, because we saw it against the Ravens. Chris Jones is a problem in the middle. And it's not like other pass rushers where, you know, most of these guys are on the edge. You don't see true pass rushers coming up the middle. They're playing off tackle, and you can put a tight end out there to help. You can put a running back out there to chip them. You can't really do that with Chris Jones. You can have running backs chip coming up the middle, but that creates a whole kind of, like, in itself creates a mess in the pocket. You're kind of sacrificing a little. If you do that, I wonder if you see a lot of play action early and they just take deep shots to early to force the Chiefs out of blitzing situations, force the Chiefs to play honest with their secondary, put 6-7 guys back. Because if you have to deal with Chris Jones, you're going to have to deal with Chris Jones.
You don't want to be dealing with. I'm not worried about Chris Jones, honestly. I think they're going to take him out.
If you're dealing with him, you don't want to be dealing with the Chiefs have blitzed the Patriots pretty heavily.
If Chris Jones takes over with guys coming from the second level. Dude, if Chris Jones takes over this game by himself, I'll be stunned. That never happens against the Patriots.
On that side of the ball against the guy who's making his second career start at center, don't rule it out.
I have a hard time worrying about Joe Tooney, too, because that guy's unbelievable. No matter what the hell
he is. I think it's a fair point.
He wasn't facing Chris Jones last week. It's a fair point.
So let me put it this way. I think that's why Joe Tooney is playing center, is because of this specific game. He talks all the time about you don't move a player to fill in for an injured player because then you have two backups, right? Joe Tooney is now, in a sense, a backup center, and you have a backup left guard in Mike Onwenu. Bill avoids that situation every chance he can. But last year, James Ferentz, who probably would be the starter if Tooney wasn't put in that spot, He got eaten alive by Chris Jones last year. So I wonder if the Raiders game was a warm-up for Tooney so that they would have him at center for this game to do with Chris Jones, and then it goes back to Ferentz with Tooney at left guard next week. I think the game plan at center against Vegas was just preparing Tooney for this challenge.
That's fair. That's a good column idea. I might have to steal that from you. Or I'll put you on that one. It's a different matchup against Chris Jones. That'll be interesting.
My key matchup, so yeah.
Okay, that's good. That's good to know. Yeah, I'm still – yeah. I will be shocked if they let one defensive lineman take over the game. But, yeah, that's a fair point about making them play back. And I do think they will throw the ball more. I don't think they're going to do the bully ball thing. But maybe they'll try to control time of possession. But Bill was asked about that today, and he said scoring points is more important. So,
I think if they run the ball, like I was saying, like I think they'll throw deep early to get the Chiefs off the blitz. But the Chiefs' defense's weakness is the run to the outside, and they're built great for that with the read option and the traditional option and some of the design runs for Cam. Like get the ball to the edge on the ground. I think they can have a ton of success there. I think they'll go to that a little more later on in the game because that also, again, it keeps Chris Jones honest if he has to be preparing to move to his left or his right and he can't just get upfield every play. But you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how they balance it because I think it's going to be very all or nothing. I think it's going to be deep shots and read options. I think that's going to be the majority of the play calls.
One more thing before we get out of here is that Damian Harris was back at practice today. That does not mean, just to be clear with anyone who's listening, it doesn't mean he's activated to the roster. They have 21 days to then activate him to the main roster. They can practice him for 2 or 3 weeks and before they actually decide that. So I don't know if Harris will be back, but I'm pretty excited to see what he could do. Do you think if he comes back, he goes right into the lead back role? Because, I mean, Bill talking about it this morning, he made it sound like even if we brought a guy back, like he might need a week or two before he even plays. So I don't know if they'd throw Harris right in there, but do you feel like he would add enough of a dimension to the offense that if he's ready to play that they should put him in there against Kansas City?
Yeah, I mean, whenever he's activated, I don't know if he'll be ready for Kansas City, but whenever he's activated, I think he takes a huge part in the offense because they can't really run those read options with Sony Michel. I don't know if they can't, but they haven't. I would assume they haven't because they don't want to run the read options with Sony Michel. Playing with Jalen Hurts at Alabama, he ran a ton. Harris ran a ton of read options. It's something he's very good at.
Jalen Harris was at Alabama. I thought he was Oklahoma.
Yep. He was at Alabama for 3 years, and then Tua came in and took his job. So he grad transferred to Oklahoma.
Jeez, I don't follow that. Behind Tua. This is why I got to follow that college football drama a little more. Sorry.
No, you're good. Tua Brady'd him out of Alabama, but
okay. Yeah, back to Damian Harris.
Right, and he ran it with Tua, too, actually. So
Okay. It's
something that he's going to – it's a dimension that he's going to add that Sony doesn't necessarily have. I think Sony gets relegated. He won't disappear completely. He's still the best goal line option that – well, I guess behind Cam. He's the best goal line option they have as a running back.
Right, yeah.
So he won't disappear completely. But I do think you'll see, you know, maybe the first week back, it's 70-30 Sony, and then 60-40, and then 50-50. And I think by the time we get to Thanksgiving, it's Damien Harris getting the – between the two of them, the heavy bulk of the carries. James White's always going to be RB1 as long as he's here, and it was good to see him back. And you know,
yep,
you
he'll
just
be
hope
right
that's
back
indication
in there.
Mentally he's in a good place, so
yes.
Happy to see him back at practice. And the way Rex Burkhead's been playing, obviously he's not going to come off the field. So I think Harris takes carries away from Sony, but you still have, and it's a good problem to have, but you still have a very crowded backfield. And J.J. Taylor's good too. I think they'd prefer not to play a rookie running back if they don't have to. A huge part of the reason Taylor was undrafted was ball security issues he had in college. Obviously that hasn't reared its head yet, but
right.
You kind of feel like he's due.
He
so
dropped.
Maybe
he had
cut
a drop
back on him a little bit.
He had the drop against the Raiders.
Drops one thing, fumbles another. So
yeah,
you know, maybe they try to pull him off the field a little bit more. But no, it's a good problem to have. They got a ton of good running backs, and I think Harris is probably the second best back they have behind James White. So I do think he will be a major factor, whether it be the week he's activated or 2-3 weeks later, pretty immediately. We'll just have to wait and see when that is.
All right. That was some real, real good football talk. I'll put my pants back on and we can
I think
get back to work here.
We made up for it after doing all that Bobo Cam Newton contract talk last week. Yeah. I think we more than redeemed ourselves.
Oh, get out of here, you Bobos. All right. I'm ready for a Tuesday night football next week, by the way.
Oh, talking about pants off. Here you go. Monday.
Take a palooza tomorrow night.
Tuesday, actual competitive football. Wednesday can get out of here. Thursday, competitive football. Friday's Friday. Saturday, competitive football. Sunday, competitive football. That's 5 days out of seven. The pants are off.
The Tank Bowl tomorrow between the Broncos and Jets. I'll even be watching that shit. That'll be fun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's talk about stakes. The report is if the Jets lose, Gase is out. That's stakes.
Oh, really?
Fans playing for his job. And have you seen this economy trying to get another job right now? You know, he's playing for his livelihood. His team's playing for his livelihood. I hope they win. I want Adam Gase around the AFC East. He's horrible. He's the worst coach in professional football. But
I hope Gase gets fired mid-game, and then he walks across the hall to the Broncos locker room, and they sign him as an offensive assistant for the second half of that game, and then see what happens. But I figured they were just leaving him in there because they're tanking for Trevor. That's what I figured it was. No. I figured you're gonna see the quarterback like literally hand the ball to the defensive end and just push him into the other end zone just to make sure they get scored against and try to lose that game. That'll be
Adam. Adam Gase is like Bruce Arians. He used to shower next to Peyton Manning, so everybody thinks he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. There's like anyone who snipped Sean McVay's farts is getting a
exactly.
job in the NFL these days. All right, well, that's enough football for now. We're going to get back to work. We'll have plenty of coverage for you at 98.5thesportshub.com. Thanks for listening, guys. I hope you enjoy the game. It's going to be a fun one. Hopefully a nice, close, fun game, and we'll talk to you next week.